Did you miss it? Episode 39. Here's a clip. And after you hear the clip, go download the show.
If anyone knows me, knows that I was involved with Memphis Wrestling. I had a very excellent source that no one knew about in Memphis Wrestling and found out tons of stuff. I had a call about when Eddie died. And knew it, and I know Doug probably don't even know this. I knew about it before Doug did. I knew about it before what they had told Randy Hales, and Randy and Doug was about to go to the ring, and I think they let him wrestle first and then told him. But I was told about it before that. And the story I was told is that Dutch walked through the door and, you know, Eddie was passed out with his earphones on the bed. Okay, so we got a few stories here. I think the family still says it was a heart attack, right? Is that what they believe it was?
I think that's what they said. I never bought it.
Okay, and then one of the main things was that it was a drug overdose. And most people that know Eddie said, okay.
It could have been. I always thought it was an intentional drug overdose. I don't think it was Eddie that did it. Eddie was doing a bunch of drugs, but he wasn't doing uppers. It would have given him the heart attack.
All right. I know what you're fixing to say, so I want to hear this because I want to hear it coming out of someone's mouth instead of someone typing it on the internet, and you were friends with Eddie during this time. What happened? Hey, welcome everyone to a new episode of Shooting the Shiznit. This is episode 43. It's Tuesday, and we're live from STS Studios in St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks to Bob McGee at WWPWBTS.com, my buddy Gene Jackson at LocalsToLegends.com. This is, as I said, episode 43. Go back and listen to episode 42, which was the Who Wants to Be the Best Shiznitter Ever. It was said to be the best Shiznit episode ever, so go back and listen to it. Also, we have every other week the Cool Kids Countdown, and that's coming up this Thursday. You can go to tinyurl.com/stspodmerch. We have stickers. We have t-shirts. You can go to paypal.com. That would be Brian_Tramiel, TRAMEL.com. At yahoo.com, you could send me some money just because you like listening to my voice, or for $20, we'll send you a Dr. X mask. You could also reach me out there on Facebook to pay. Guys, you can go to the site, www.stspod.club. You can also follow us on Twitter at comicbookmarkbt. And if you're on Facebook, search Cool Kids Wrestling and MMA Talk Facebook group. That is the official group for Shooting the Shiznit. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher. A big shout out to Suplex City Limits, Creative Control, and Keeping It 100, our favorite podcast. All right, let's get to our guests. Been in there drinking milk and eating cookies and taking his vitamins. It's Van, the man, Van Horn. Welcome to Shooting the Shiznit.
Hey guys, how you doing tonight, Brian?
Oh man, I'm doing good. This show is, I don't know if you've listened to any episodes, but what it is, it's just, it's just two guys sitting down shooting the shit, but it's either somebody I've been knowing forever, or someone I don't even know and I find interesting and something to do with the wrestling business. So, if no one else tells you this today, I find you interesting, okay?
Wow. Wow. I'm going to go have a plaque engraved right now.
Yeah, it's been fun. We've been tagging back and forth. Finally got to sit down. And I got a chance to, the last couple of days, is watch some of your, some of the old video. And I'll ask you questions and let you talk about that. But just amazing some of the guys you've been in the ring with, and there may be a lot of people listening to this that may not know who you are, and I know that don't hurt your feelings because that wasn't what it was about.
Right.
But I gotta apologize because while I was on the internet, I seen you against Simon Reed, so I apologize for you having to work Simon Reed.
I apologize every time I'm in the ring with him too.
Simon's a good friend of mine, been a long time friend, and
I just got off the phone with him, Brian, like 2 seconds before you called.
Awesome, awesome. And then I seen that match, and it was you, and in a tag team match, I was like, God, you know, he's got to work something. Ah, oh, shit, I hate that for him. So, but, yeah, those boys, about 9 years ago, the posse was so over. It's unbelievable in this
area. I've heard.
I see kids crying in the front row because they were getting beat up.
We know we actually beat them in a loser leaf town about a year ago, and about half the house was in tears. It was the first time they'd ever lost a loser leaf town.
Unbelievable. And what they did to get over, and nothing against Simon and Chris, but they weren't, Chris was just getting started, wasn't the best workers around, but what they did was they did double heat the whole, like, summer. And, you know, they get beat up, and then make the hot tag, but they cut them off as soon as the hot tag. And then, you know, Chris took, and then boom, back to Simon. And the fans ate that up, and they never had really seen it done. They mm-hmm. always, you know, get the old hot tag and the way to do things. So here we go, Sarah. We're going to spend 5 minutes talking about Simon Reed. We can't do that. So tell me when – let's start – I mean, I watched you – you still with me?
Yeah,
I'm just making sure here. Sometimes these technical problems here, but it looks like you're still with me. So tell me, because I watched you bump, man. You know how to bump. You just trained very well. I don't know who trained you. So let's just start out there. What year did we start, and when did you get trained?
Started in 1985. A local independent guy named Butch Moore. Actually met him through someone you probably know, Snowman.
Yes.
met Snow in the gym. I was in my very early 20s, still in college, and, you know, just kind of said, hey, I'm looking for somebody to train me. And he says, well, we've got a guy in West Memphis, Arkansas, just across the bridge from Memphis where I live. And he says, they've got a little school going over there. So went over there, met Butch. He actually trained me for about 8 months, which back in those days on the trying to get trained by an independent guy, they were kind of come and go, and you'd slide him a little money, and you wouldn't see him again for a year.
Right, right. Yeah.
But Butch was very diligent in his training with me, and I couldn't have been more blessed and happier with the outcome.
Now, when you're talking about now, is that the same school that Rough and Ready was there, and Atomic Dog, and those guys?
Yeah, wow, you go back, man. That's
51.
Good knowledge right there, brother.
Yeah, I'll be 51 years old. I grew up on Memphis Wrestling. I grew up in a little town in Missouri where that was, you know, what we did every Saturday. So
sure.
Rough and Ready and Atomic Dog was there. And Rough and Ready's famous. So there are some of the two famouses when it comes to old Memphis Wrestling. People love them guys. So it'll be fun to see who remembers them that we're sitting here talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So did you get to work those guys during the training?
No. They were actually already on TV5 in Memphis and working for those guys. But I did end up probably within the next couple of years that I traveled with those guys quite a bit. And, just really great guys, whether we were working together or working against each other. Working against each other was really a lot of fun because I like to really snug it up. And those guys were known. They lay their punches in.
Yeah, I seen them on an independent show in Blytheville, Arkansas one night. You know, Outlaws, what they called it back then.
Uh-huh.
And they were so snug. I mean, I was like, damn, they're hitting for real. But, yeah, they were snug. I just thought they were giving a little rookie guy hell or something. But that's awesome. So I don't – now, I may be wrong here. I don't remember – did you ever work Memphis TV?
I did work Memphis TV for a short time. I guess this is a good a story as any we can really kick this thing off with.
All right.
I got a call one day. I'd been wrestling about a year. Got a call from Jerry Lawler. He says, Van, I've heard about you. Heard you're doing some good things. Think I might have a tag team deal for you. Need you to come by my house. Let's talk about it.
Oh, my God. I think I know where you're going here, but go ahead.
It's 80. This is probably 86, so I'm 23 years old at the time.
Right.
I mean, what kid sitting around at 23 and Jerry Lawler calls him and says, hey, I'm going to hand this gift to you. So, you know, I go over and see Jerry. He had a kid that Buddy Wayne had been training, about the same size as me, young guy, 19 or 20 years old, was at U of M. And Jerry had came up with the gimmick of the Beach Boys.
Okay, all right.
And he says, here's the deal. He says, it's a full-time spot. He says, we're going to bring you guys in. And it's the time the Fabs were leaving Memphis.
Oh,
and
wow, yeah.
He says, the goal is for you guys to fill that slot for us. He says, it's not going to happen overnight. He says, but, you know, we've got the Nightmares here. We've got Fire and Flame here. We've got the Rough and Ready here. We've got Memphis Vice here. We've got all these guys that can help mold and groom you guys. And I'm like, holy cow, this is a dream come true. So, you know, we go to our first TV. He puts us, you know, we're wrestling, I think it's 7 nights a week, doing 8 or 9 different shows during those 7 days. I mean, you know, constant circuit back then. The third night, I believe we're in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
All right.
And we wrestled in these. You'll remember, you're age appropriate. You'll remember the old.
I actually was probably there, if you want to know the truth. No, I mean, I was in college at that time.
Yeah.
And I was, and I would go to all the shows. I had an inside source, let's just put it that way.
Okay.
That I actually was able just to walk through the back. It's no secret to anyone around, but Dutch Mantel used to bring me, Brian Lee used to bring me through the back. I would go through the back and just go and sit down and watch the show. And I was kind of like, after the show, Dutch would say, well, you know, who fucked up or what went wrong there? Or, you know, how did it go kind of thing. Yeah, and I was there one night where Kevin Von Erich hit Dutch so hard that we didn't know until probably about midnight whether he was going to be all right or not.
Wow.
And Kevin had the pink eye. You know, there wasn't nothing wrong with him but the pink eye. he wasn't doing any drugs. No, not at all.
Right. Right. That ran in the family, I think.
Yeah, allegedly. That's what I heard. Allegedly it did. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so we're in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Our third night of full time, and you know, you remember the shorts called jams? They were like this knee-length thin cotton short, right, that the beach guys wore. Well, that's what we wore to the ring. And my partner John was kind of thick from the waist down.
As a student, I like
And so, like, out of our first 3 or 4 matches, he had already ripped out the seats out of 2 pairs. So we're walking back from the ring, and King's in a side dressing room. As we walk by, John tucks his head in. He says, hey, King, you know, you think maybe we could maybe wear like some biker spandex shorts or something? He says, these jams just aren't very athletic. Jerry says, let me think about that, John. So we go back to the dressing room. We're getting undressed. Didn't think anything about it. About 3 to 5 minutes later, Jerry pops in. He looks at John. He says, John, the next time you ever think you know more than anything about wrestling when it comes to this business, you'll be wrong again. He says, so you're fired.
Oh, my God.
And he looks at me and he says, man,
okay.
I'm sorry. It was a tag team deal, and we don't have anybody else to put with you. We've got you booked for 3 weeks. You guys can finish out. We'll job you out, and you'll be done.
Wow.
Yeah.
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 So was – I'm sitting here watching from 1986, June the 7th. I'm going to put it on a website when we air this interview. But you guys had – let me just tell you, you had some pretty shorts. You know.
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did. Shut up.
But that was long, and you never went back to work, Memphis, because I remember all the things when they call your name out.
Yeah.
They say Memphis, Tennessee, and I'm like, oh man, that's, you know, he's still good, putting over the Memphis there.
Yeah, yeah, and I ended up going back and working under a hood for Memphis for a while. Motley Crue and I worked under a hood. We worked when the Midnight Rockers came through. We worked the Rockers for 2 or 3 weeks in a row on TV, but we were under hood, so nobody knew.
Right now, what was the gimmick y'all were using there?
I want to say. Nate the Rat was our manager, and we were the executioners.
Oh, wow. How long did it take them to come up with that one, huh?
I think Jerry keeps, like, about 35 different gimmicks in his back pocket. I mean, that guy's so creative. I hate to put over the guy that fired me, but he is. I mean, he's, you know, we all know that. Jerry's just an extremely creative guy, and he's always thinking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been around him a lot, and he's always been you know, like, what I always thought was fun is that, you know, and people don't understand this, that Jerry and Bill both, but Jerry's real good about walking through the curtain and not at one time talking to who he was going to wrestle, and he goes out there and just works.
I mean,
that's it.
I had
two young guys that were scared to death because they were fixing to work, Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler, and I said, guys, just go in and listen. That's all you got to do. And they had a hell of a match. The crowd loved it and everything. So it's like poetry when it comes to the King. Some of his ideas were really bad, but, you know, the Beach Boys wasn't as bad as some of his ideas. I can see those pants, though. Jeez, I remember those. You could actually get those. So we worked in Memphis a little bit, but then you got, I mean, you were working AWA, you was working WWE, and if I'm talking to some young people that don't understand the business at that point, and this word is not a bad word. Well, it wasn't a bad word back then. This meant you had a job. But a jobber was a guy and his job was to walk through the door and put over the talent. It was a good job. You got paid. See you later. You know, no big TV or anything. But you have a long list of guys that you were in the ring with. But how did you get to become one of those guys that does that?
A fluke, an absolute fluke, was working an indie show in, I think I was actually in Malden, Missouri.
Oh, wow.
For our good friend Henry Rogers.
Yes,
God rest his soul.
I actually
right?
booked Malden for about 6 months. So yeah.
And I wrestled this kid, and he comes to me after the match. He says, "Have you ever thought about wrestling for WWF?" And I'm like, I mean, this guy's, you know, my age, 22, 23, 24. I'm like,
right.
Who doesn't think about it? He says, "Well, I'm going up and I'm doing jobs for them," and he says, "I think I could get you a job up there. I really enjoyed working with you." He says, "The guy that gets me up there could pull some strings and we can get you up there." And I'm like, I would love to do that. So
I know you're young here, but are you thinking that this is going to be the truth or this guy's bullshitting me at this point?
Well, and it wasn't going to affect me either way.
All right, yeah.
Right? If it came through, wow, great. I'm going to get to do this and do this and do this. And if it doesn't, hey, I'll figure it out somewhere. So it was 3 days later, he calls me. He says, the next TV taping, at that time they were taping on, I believe it was Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and they were doing three shows each night. It was back in the old Superstars of Wrestling days.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And they would fly me up. I mean, they sent tickets to my house, the airline tickets. All expenses paid. I did not pay for anything from the moment I left my house.
Awesome.
And I was making, and this is 87, and I was making $200 a match.
I can't beat that. You know, that's a funny thing that you say all that, but that was the that's the way they did things. And even today, some of the guys talk about having to pay for their own expenses.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you were being shipped in. Your job was to lose to the big guys. But, you know, $200 a spot, that's still good money today, if you were doing a couple of shows a week. So hold on just a minute. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back.
Hey, folks, thanks for listening to this episode, but I want to remind you, we are in the days of summer. That's right, Summer Sizzler Shiznit Giveaway. I want to give away some Shiznit, and I want to give it to you. I have t-shirts. I have lunchboxes. I want to give them to you. So how do you win? Well, you look for a new episode of Shooting a Shiznit, a new episode of any of my podcasts. Retweet them. As soon as you retweet, your name goes into a sweaty baseball cap. That's right, because it's summer. Your name will go in a sweaty baseball cap, and on September the 1st, when it's all and done, I will start pulling names out and giving out prizes. So retweet, listen, shooting a shiznit, win money, Super Sizzler Shiznit Giveaway! Now back to the show.
In St. Louis, Missouri. Now we're talking about you got a job with the WWE. How long did you do jobs for the WWE?
It probably, I think it went about 6 or 8 months. Unfortunately, right at the end of that run, and I was still getting, I mean, they were sending me airline tickets every 3 weeks. Right. I was going up, but I got a full-time job with FedEx in Memphis.
Right.
And it got to the point I couldn't travel during the week. And so it came to a point of, okay, I'm getting, you know, $400 every 3 weeks of WWE, or I'm going to get on the FedEx potential career, and I'll make, you know, that much plus, you know, each week. And, you know, 20, 23, 24, 25 year old guy, already married at the time. And, you know, it's one of those adult decisions that I didn't want to have to make.
Right. When you went in for those, did you do more than one match per day, or did you just do, were they taping more than one show per day?
Yeah, they would do, three shows a night. We would start at about, 7, and by the time we wrapped everything up, it would be about 10:30 to 11 by the time you put breaks in and move things around and that type stuff. Generally just one match a night. I did have one night. It was one of the best nights of my life, actually. I did two dark matches, and then I did a television match. The two dark matches were and for you guys out there that don't know, a dark match is a match that's just not going to be on the television show. It's just for the audience there that night. I did tryout matches for Joe LaDuke and for Jeep Swenson, and then I had a televised match with One Man Gang. So I may be the only guy who's ever wrestled over 1,000 pounds in one night.
Well, I've seen the One Man Gang match. I've seen that. And I do apologize for Jeep Swenson.
Oh my
God,
he
was a little stiff there.
Sweet guy, but yeah, super. You felt every ounce of him.
Joe was a real nice guy too. A lot of people didn't know him to be because of the personality on TV. I don't know if he was nice to you that night, but he was always nice to me. So
I had met Joe in Memphis a couple of times before, and so as soon as you know what they did was they put all the names up on the chalkboard with the matches. And you'll find your guy, and you'll get with him, okay? And he sees me, and he's like, "Van Memphis." I mean, you know, Joe was always Joe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like talking to Randy Savage. He was always Randy Savage. But he was like, "I know you're a good boy. This will be fine." And it was. I mean, he stomped the living daylight out of me. But I mean, Joe was a big guy too, right?
Yes, a huge guy. Yeah, he was. All right, so we also got hooked up with the AWA at one point because I see you on tapings against. I know I've seen you against the Midnight Express, right? That version, Randy Rhodes and Dennis Condrey.
Yep.
And was Paul Lee with them during that run?
Was Paul Lee? Yeah, I believe Paul Lee was there.
I believe he was.
Yeah. I actually had met. There was a group of guys coming down and working. For WWF the same time I was, like five or six guys, all trained by the same guy, and they were coming down and doing the jobs for WWE, and we just all kind of fell in love with each other, and they kind of adopted me as their Southern Milwaukee brother, and they're like, "Hey, we're going out and doing some shows for AWA, and they can use another couple of guys. Would you be interested in tacking on an extra day when we're through here maybe a couple of times?"
Right.
So we would go up and do WWE shows. We'd leave straight from there and head to Vegas and do shows at the Showboat for AWA.
Right. Yeah, they were. Yeah, and Jake McMillan. Well, he was one of the main guys with that crew.
Yeah. And that was out of my Milwaukee guys. Yeah, the Milkman was like the senior guy. He and Tom Rocky Stone. I think Tom had trained all the guys. And if you remember that name from AWA days,
Jake a lot, and that's one of the names I see when I was. I just put the search into YouTube and looked around just to see, you know. And if you would have sucked in the ring, I would have just had to tell you I can't interview you. So no. And then I mean, you're now still working, and I know it's part time, and it is in. I want to talk about a couple of the big superstars you did work, but you're still working, and it's a little bit different in that you got a lot smaller arena, a lot smaller crowd, and guys that, you know, that aren't household names. We talked about Simon Reed, and no one, if they're not in the Memphis area, have no idea what the hell we're talking about.
Sure.
But you know, what is, do you like it as much as you did when you were in the, with the huge big crowd, or, you know, is there a preference, or you just like working? I mean, you know.
I think now that I respect it more. When you're a kid, you think it's going to last forever.
Right.
You know, today's going to be tomorrow and the day after and the day after. Well, now it's, you know, there's definitely a clock ticking in my life. I'm probably in the best shape I've ever been in my life. Ran like an 850 mile last night at 54 years old.
Hey, can't beat that.
at 215 pounds.
Right.
You know, incline bench 225 for 6 reps last night. So, you know, I have a grander respect for what we put our bodies through and for what the business is all about. And now it's more about giving back to guys. I mean, my thing is I like to find a young guy and say, hey, do you realize where you're placing your feet when you're grabbing somebody in a headlock?
Right.
Do you realize how stupid it looks? Just those little things like that. I love to help guys.
That's anytime, one of those little things that I always did when people would say, what'd you think about my match, especially the young guys, was I was always particular about facial expressions. You know, the young guys get in there and do more moves than I ever thought be able to do, but they're not into it. The face is not portraying them as a character or whatever they're doing. So that I always picked apart their face expressions. When I seen them start doing stuff like that, you knew they were kind of getting, and the psychology of it. Some people can work years. I know people that I could tell you their names and you probably know them, but don't understand the psychology of coming in and out of heat or when it's your turn. You know, what's the heel supposed to do and what the baby's supposed to do? And a lot of people don't know it.
Right.
Okay, we got about 8 minutes. I know it goes by really fast, but
it really does.
You was in the ring with some really big names, and that's we like to pick that apart just to see, you know, were they assholes? Were they good guys? What did you think, kind of thing? And, you know, most of them's dead anyway, so, you know.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, they're not going to listen to this podcast. I mean, it is, you know, heard all around the world, but most of them are dead. So I did see you was in the ring with Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid. So give me your
–
what did you think about those guys?
You know, Davey Boy and Dynamite were they were the consummate backstage pranksters. It seemed like their goal in life was to infuriate One Man Gang.
Oh my God!
That's all they ever did. Of all the guys you could pick on, why would you pick a legitimate giant? I mean, just constantly on that guy. For me, working with them, just professionals, just so. So professional. I mean, at that time, I was a little bit bigger guy, too. I mean, I'm 6 feet tall, and then I was around 230 or 235. And so I matched up with those guys pretty good physically. And but their game was so A+. Not a bad word. I mean, most of the guys, that's the thing with most of the guys in WWE, and I'll relate this to a real quick story with my first match for WWF. Was with Demolition, who at that time was just starting to get their push.
I watched that match, yeah.
And, you know, boom, 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 they're getting their push, they're killing me. Well, Barry Darstall, I'm in the middle of the ring, and he comes over, and he still to this day is the hardest chop I've ever taken. And it wasn't a fact of taking a bump. It was a fact of if I could get back up after having my chest caved in. And then he gives me the chop, he stands over me, and he looks down, he smiles, and he just laughs. So match is done. We get back to the dressing room. He and Bill both come put their arms around me. And it's a true story. They say, so you're a tough guy, huh? I said, no, sir, but I'd like to be one. Oh, they said, well, you're a tough guy to us. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, the best compliment a kid can get, right?
It is. And thing, we talked about Demolition last Tuesday on a Shooting Assistant, and we talked about how as kids growing up during that time, we hated Vince by bringing in Demolition because he couldn't get the Road Warriors. So he brought in Demolition, and we just absolutely hated him. And then later on in life, when I was helping tag teams, I would have them watch Demolition matches.
We didn't realize how good they were because we all wanted them to be the Road Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
So technically so much better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, Bill being the mass superstar, he was always huge and good at the time. All right. Randy Savage, you mentioned him, so tell me a good Randy Savage story.
Walking down the hallway, the names are up on the board, and I'm walking down the hall, maybe going to dinner because they catered in dinner every night. And Randy comes up, touches me on the arm, and I'm going to give you my best Randy impersonation. And he says, "Hey, Ben, right? You're Ben, right? Yeah, Ben, Ben, yeah." He says, "You think, would it be okay? You know what I mean, man? Yeah, if you could, like, come over to the dressing room, you know, yeah, you know what I mean, man? Yeah, with Elizabeth and myself, yeah. And we could talk about the match." I mean, verbatim, that was, I mean, Randy was Randy. There was no character. Randy was Randy. We go in the dressing room, talk about it, boom, 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 and, you know, go out. One of my favorite matches to watch when I can find it. He was just, I mean, he to me, he and Kurt Hennig, when I think about athletes in the game, they're my guys that I look at their physiques and the way they moved as being, they're the guys I try to emulate in the way I look and the way I move.
Right.
That, you know, and they're both, I mean, neither one are that much older, especially Kurt. Kurt's maybe was a couple of years older than me, but just so athletic, so, I mean, they were, to me, they were head and shoulders above, you know, most of the crowd.
Oh, I agree. Those guys, yeah. Kurt was just fantastic. Just all right. I see you was in a tag team match, but did you get to work Haku?
Oh yes, yes. I was in a tag team match versus Haku was part of the Islanders,
right?
With Tama, I believe Tama.
Right.
And I actually messed up to tell you just how it goes sometimes. I messed up a spot in that match. And they gave me, I believe it was a double hip toss, and I was supposed to stay flat, and they were dropping the double elbows. Well, I raised my head about 6 or 8 inches. That's it. And once I was just coming up to sell it, and I remembered, oh, my God, I'm supposed to be laying flat. Well, I'm going back down as they dropped the elbows. Didn't seem like a big deal. Well, it wasn't until we got back to the dressing room. And I go walking by, and Tom was like, I mean, falls off the deep end.
Right.
Falls off the deep end. This is our livelihood. How could you F up our spot? Da-da-da-da-da. And if it hadn't been for Haku, I would have probably got to find out how tough a Samoan was that night, because I think he was going to try to beat my ass. I mean, he was pissed.
Wow.
And but Haku was there. Hey, hold on, Tom. Hold on. He's a kid, right? He's learning. It didn't mess it up. It's going to be fine on TV. I promise. We still went through with it. Everything else was fine. And so Haku with a may have saved me a doctor's bill that night.
Awesome, awesome. All right, and we've got about 3 minutes. We're going to talk about, I seen that you worked Rick Rude.
Probably my favorite guy to work with up there.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I was actually the first person that ever took the Rude Awakening on WWF television.
Wow. Now, that's a trivia contest. If we ever do a trivia contest, that'd be a good question there, guys.
Pat Patterson comes and grabs me in the back. He's got Rick with him. He says, "Van, you're working Rick tonight. We're getting ready to give him a push towards the Intercontinental, and he's going to use the neck breaker as his finish, and here's the way we want to go down. Hard cameras here." Rick actually let me hit him, which is never got to hit a guy getting pushed.
Right.
And from that point forward, and the same way was Randy, those two guys both always called me by my name every time they saw me from that point forward.
They were showing you the respect. So
exactly.
Before we get off here, and I always forget to do this at the beginning, and I'm trying to get a good habit to do this. Go ahead and number one, I do thank you, but number two, if you got a website, or you got a Facebook, or you got the Twitter, as they call it on Memphis television. Twitter, if you have Twitter there, tell us how we can follow you and find out what you're doing for the weekend.
Yeah, Facebook is just Van Van Horn on Facebook. It's an interactive page. I mean, I get if fans send me notes, I respond back to them at first I can. And then I'm always putting up whatever, wherever I'm wrestling at, I'll put up the promo cards, whatever the promotion puts out. And like this week, and when something special comes up, I'll cut a little promo. I get to let out some of the inner me that I hide from a lot of people. I'm just an everyday average guy who happens to wrestle on the weekends, but there's a lot of pent up comedian in me that I get to get out in my promos.
Oh yeah, I mean that's what I always liked about it. I was a manager, and ran around the ring all the time and had a fun time. So, but yeah, yeah. I did listen. Since we never know when we air these episodes, I try to get as many in the can as possible. If you go to his Facebook, there is, I believe there's an interview. It was about a rap battle, and I absolutely loved it. It was hilarious. It really was.
I need to be medicated. There's no doubt.
All right, guys, that's another episode of Shooting the Shiznit, the best little wrestling podcast in the business. Guys, join us next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.